TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride here. Now, if you're listening to this chat, this is perhaps a name that you haven't come across. Eglantine Jebb. And you know, as I go through my life, I know people will say to me, that name just suits that person. Maybe a Max, who is a large man. Well, Eglantine is a name that so much suits the temperament of our woman today. Eglantine's name actually means a prickly plant, a sweet briar of a wild rose with lots and lots of needles. So there we have the image of a prickly person, but a beauty of a rose. And I think it suits our Eglantine very, very well. So how to begin? How does the name suit Eglantine? She was born in Shropshire in 1876. A member of a wealthy, comfortably off family, but also a family with a strong social conscience. Now, we're looking at late Victorian times, where although women could not vote and even fully participate in public life, many of them at a local level had found ways of doing their bit, let's put it that way. And Eglantine was surrounded by strong women who had these ideas about the world. Her mother had founded an arts and craft association to give employment in the area. Her sister went on later to help begin the Women's Land Army in World War I. Another sister married a radical Labour MP and was very involved in education for the working classes. She even had a spinster aunt. Spinster, there's another word from an earlier era, who had never married but had money and determination to learn skills and teach them to Eglantine, who became very proficient in carpentry and in fishing and in all kinds of gardening and, of course, in any kind of financial issues. So this was setting up Eglantine for an active life and a life of, we could call it, service. Her first idea was to go to university. So she did, one of the very first, and read history at Oxford University. But 1 year teaching decided her teaching was not for her. Good for her, making that decision early was probably very wise. And she put her mind to finding out about the society, doing statistics, gathering information, seeing what the reality was in poor areas of survival and more often low survival rates of children, for example. And she wanted to apply these analytical, modern scientific approaches to her charity work. She did lots of background work on education committees, and then, as she was a young, fit and active adult, did what she could in her local area, even leading up to World War I, setting up a boys' employment registry, trying to see what could be done. As the war was approaching, she travelled to the Eastern Front, already a very turbulent area, to try and see what could best support the people of Macedonia who were facing very, very grim times. So she was seeing the reality of conflict, and she was seeing the reality, especially the impact on children. What she did thereafter was to focus her enormous talents on how children were suffering. And at the end of the war wasn't just one day in November 1918. The war, especially for the former German countries and the country which therefore was badly, badly defeated, faced extreme poverty, extreme famine. and it was clear to Eglantine that the Allied blockade following the war was having an appalling impact, especially on the children of the defeated countries. She set up a pressure group called Fight the Famine Council, saying children should not be victims of what adults decided to do. We must protect the children. Now, this was an interesting and even very, very surprising attitude just after the end of the First World War. She was so determined, she had leaflets printed, and she stood in Trafalgar Square and gave out the leaflets saying, "Fight the famine, save the children." She was arrested, and the Crown prosecutor must have agreed with her decency, and he paid her fine even after he had fined her. This showed her that ordinary people were more understanding and supportive of the ordinary civilians in Germany and Austria than perhaps the official government line was. And this gave her an inspiration and an idea. In 1919, she set up the embryonic group that became Save the Children Fund. She was immediately surprised and delighted that the British public donated a large sum of money. They knew the children were not to blame. They wanted to support these children in these dire situations. And working with her sister Dorothy, by 1920, the very basics of the Save the Children Union had been established in Geneva. It was always Eglantine's wish to run this as more than a do-good charity. It had to be positive, it had to be scientific, had to make the way the organisation worked most efficiently so that any money gathered could go directly to the children who needed it. And that's when you see Eglantine, perhaps in an echo, sadly, of our present world, she faced one humanitarian crisis after the other. Because after the situation in Austria and Hungary began to ease, there was a huge crisis around 1921 in Greece, and that was followed by an even greater emergency, the Russian famine of 1921, which actually affected the old Russian Empire, including the present-day country of Ukraine. Eglantine's organisation shipped hundreds of tons of food and medical supplies during this crisis. And you know, it was clear to her that one crisis after the other needed an organisation that would support children. And also, she wanted to put it very closely and clearly into the world view that children need to have rights. Now, we may think, of course children have rights, but in fact, that was a very new idea, that children should not be victims of adult conflict. And she crafted the Declaration of the Rights of the Child, and it was adopted in 1924 by the organisation, the League of Nations. An organisation which saw the need for this, but sadly, of course, the League of Nations was not able to stop the next great crisis of the World War. Eglantine did not live to see these greater tragedies of the 30s and into World War II. She died really very young, and she died in 1924. And you know, she had struggled against very, very great thyroid illness. One might almost say that she could easily have taken to her bed and just read magazines and not bothered about the world. But that wasn't the making of this woman, and that wasn't the work that she did. And you know, it's amazing how little she is known. Perhaps it's because she died relatively young, or perhaps it's because The organisation was the focus of the world attention and not the person. So that's why she's very much overlooked by history. Because when you look at the work of the Save the Children today, in these days we're living through of extreme trauma and extreme challenge for children, the work is amazing how much she has managed. The Save the Children Fund currently work in over 100 countries, and it's reckoned that their charity, as professional and as dedicated as was always the dream of Eglantine, has saved the lives and enhanced the lives of over 100 million children in 115 countries. Now, if that's not a legacy, I don't know what is. The most vivid, perhaps, legacy of Eglantine Jebb is that we do have a Universal Children's Day. Now, you might not know the day, but you might be aware of their logo. It's a globe of the world and children holding hands around the world. This was the logo adopted by the United Nations, and the 20th of November is Universal Children's Day. It's come a long way in its development from the first dreams and beliefs in social justice for children as dreamed of by Eglantine Jebb. A woman in the shadows, a woman who created and contributed so much, a prickly woman who wanted things done properly, quite usually that was her way, but anyone who worked with her recognised her devotion and her utter dream of bringing better lives to the children of the world. Eglantine Jebb, the founder of the Save the Children Fund. Take care of yourselves, folks. Bye-bye.
TNF Soundings.